It's good to be home, even though it's hard to find home when you move it on me. I've been working and living in Cambodia for about a year, and I want to share a little bit of that experience with you, and then kind of how to grapple with, like, how I've been grappling with the difficult situation both on the ground there and with the loss of Carolyn. That was really hard for all of us, and I've been processing that alone, but there's a story that kind of is inspired by that that psalm that I need to share with you today. It's really important to me. The most transformative part of my practice in Cambodia, or what I'm doing in Cambodia, is obviously, like everyone that comes home, has to do with me, and it has to do with prayer. So I'd like to talk to you about a prayer practice that I've been doing in Cambodia and kind of walk you through that. This prayer practice comes from Francis de Sales, a monk that lived 400 years ago. And it has four parts, and then maybe a fifth part if you want to add it. But the first part is to take stock of creation. And so that we're an oxbow, we'll take a moment and consider creation around us. Creator God created the trees that are growing out of the grass, created the sun shining on us, that bird singing over there. The insects buzzing around. I sit in the morning and I try to think about that on my best days. And the second step of the prayer is to think of yourself as part of that creation. Feel your heart beat. Feel you breathe. Take a deep breath in. You're breathing in creation. The oxygen comes from creation. Gives you energy. Comes from God. The third step is to consider transcendent humanity. The example of Jesus. Someone you know who has overcome more than you think that they ought to bear. Lift up that example. Consider yourself as part of transcendent humanity. The burdens you bear, connected to those burdens. And you lift them together with the other people in your life. After considering these things, and sometimes maybe you sit in silence, and once you've placed yourself in the presence of God, and you sit, and you wait for God to move you, man, it's really powerful. And at the end, I close with the hymns of the song we're going to sing at the end. God lift you up on eagle's wings, bear you on the breath of dawn, make you shine like the sun, and hold you in the palm of God's hand. And it's a way of centering yourself in the chaos that is the world we live in. The chaos of Goshen, Indiana is different than the chaos of Cambodia, so I'm going to try to order the chaos of Cambodia a little bit so if people have some context of the work that we're doing, so I can tell a few stories that I think embody the transformational work of God in that setting. Cambodia has an extremely painful recent history. Decades of civil war rocked the country, and the U.S. dropped tons of bombs trying to win the war in Vietnam, a secret bombing of Cambodia destabilized the region, contributing to the genocidal Khmer Rouge in 1975. From 1975 to 1979, the Communist Party of Kampuchea, the Khmer Rouge, led by Pol Pot, attempted to create an agricultural nation of pure Khmer people. In addition to killing millions of Khmer people who were educated, religious or political leaders, musicians, artists, glasses wearers, the Khmer Rouge targeted Muslims, Vietnamese, and other minorities. The genocidal regime ended when the Khmer Rouge attempted to take back the lower Mekong Delta from the Vietnam, and these skirmishes eventually led to a Vietnamese invasion and liberation and occupation, and the Khmer folks still are struggling to deal with how to manage their own country. Rebuilding a society is no small task. It's easy to point out problems. To make matters worse, corruption is rampant. Conflicts over land and forest have led to environmental degradation, and climate change is not only making it hotter, but more difficult to survive as a farmer, which most people do. People within education were uniquely targeted so that there was a policy that if you had a fourth grade education, you would often be teaching third graders in the schools. And so you built an education system of folks that were largely struggling with literacy themselves. And so when we think about building forward from that platform, it's just brutally difficult. And then we work in literacy in these schools, so I want to talk a little bit about Khmer literacy because it's amazing how difficult the Khmer language is. It's an alphabetical language that is part of the Khmer Mon language family. It's undergone a bunch of changes that have followed the political upheavals, but it holds the Guinness World Record for having the most letters. It is 74 letters long, so any Khmer person that can read is about three times as literate as you are. It also doesn't have spaces. So now, imagine reading a text and just having to know intuitively where the words end and where they begin. Our job supporting literacy, like, I'm not literate in Khmer, right? So, like, it's a kind of Quixotic, help me with that one. The work that we do. It has superscripts and subscripts. It has silent letters galore. Oftentimes, Cambodians don't agree on how to spell words properly. That being said, I really believe that, in total there are 106 symbols, right? So, including that are regularly used in the text. And the consonants, they have inherent vowel sounds that change depending on whether they are voiced or unvoiced. So if you have depending on whether or not there's a, like the vowel that follows it, it changes the consonant sound. If the consonant stands alone, it changes how it sounds. If the vowel stands alone, Khmer is not written linearly. So, like in English, you might read a word left to right. Lots of vowels come before consonants in Khmer. So you'll be reading a word like, for example, that, and the A would come at the beginning of the word just every time. Not every time, about 50% of the time, which just makes it more confusing. And then sometimes there are like words that, like English, there are a few words that aren't spelled like they sound. So it's like from a literacy perspective, a nightmare. And the literacy rates in the region are lower than that of like any other country in the area, and rival that of like sub-Saharan African countries that really are really struggling as well. So it's just like a really tough situation. It's challenging. So like my role is to manage a small education program with MCC, and we haven't solved it. Thank you. We have a breakfast program that offers some students that are from really poor backgrounds breakfast, which gives them potentially the opportunity to focus more in school. We have games and manipulatives that ideally offer the kids a way to engage with the alphabet in a more hands-on way, which is good. we've organized student councils at some of these schools, and so the kids can take pride in like cleaning the grounds and ideally sometimes and also helping with teaching younger kids and playing with the younger kids with the manipulatives, which is fun. And we take the teachers on exposure visits, which I think is probably the favorite part of the job. We take them to visit other award-winning schools in Cambodia so they can bring back the ideas that they see there, which is how a lot of our program got started. We also do teacher coaching, so we sit with teachers, and afterwards we ask them, what did you think, what did you like about your lesson? What would you improve? How many students were learning? And we have to make sure that we don't really offer solutions, because if it becomes really dangerous if I show up and I start offering solutions that like don't actually make sense in that context or with their framework of what education is. So that's a sweeping overview of all of the struggles, which you have to acknowledge if you're going to talk about like where you see hope. And so my dad often said when I was a kid, and I didn't really understand it, like, you don't know how lucky you are. And like living in Cambodia, it's just like drives home for me every day is like how lucky I am as an individual. But the arc of my like time in Cambodia was really, really marked by Carolyn's passing. Prior to her passing, I was focused on these problems with like an intensity that was really depressing. It was really tough. And the educational system and the poverty that I was living within was too much like to handle. And praying isn't a solution to poverty, but it does allow me to acknowledge my connection to both creation and folks living in poverty. And then I picked up the Book of Joy, which was a phenomenal read for me. And it, the Dalai Lama met with Archbishop Desmond Tutu to describe how they still have joy after so many years of working in really tough situations. Because believe it or not, I'm not the only person that's trying to make a difference in a tough situation. Just as all of you are trying to make differences here in your community, which I think is far more sustainable. So he describes a teacher. While my teacher was alive, I always felt like he was a solid rock behind me that I could lean on. I really felt very, very sad and full of grief when he passed away. The way through sadness and grief that comes from loss is to use it as motivation and to generate a deeper sense of purpose. When my teacher passed away, I used to think that now I have even more responsibility to fulfill his wishes. So my sadness translated into more enthusiasm, more determination. I have told those who had lost their dear friend or family members, it is very sad, but the sadness can translate into more determination to fulfill their wishes. If the one you lost could see you, and you were determined and full of hope, they would be happy, and this would be the greatest. With the great sadness of loss, one can even have a more meaningful life. So I've been working on channeling the grief of both the systemic poverty and the loss of Carolyn into more hope. And it's a rocky process, but I think it's most like accurately synthesized by what I see in Cambodia as a poem that was written in this context but translates really well to the Cambodian people I see. It's written by Tupac a while ago. Did you hear about the rose that grew from the crack in the concrete? Proving nature's law is wrong, it learned to walk without having feet. Funny it seems, but by keeping its dreams, it learned to breathe fresh air. Long live the rose that grew from the concrete when no one else ever cared. And I've met so many roses in Cambodia, and I've tried not to be concrete. And so I'm going to share with you like three examples of Cambodian roses that I've seen, that's a good thing. So we do our exposure visits, and we take our schools to visit other schools in the area. The intention is like you have to spread around the good things, because there are really good things and people who take pride in their education, and the pride that the schools have started taking in their infrastructure projects is phenomenal. They go to other schools that are also rural and also poor, and they come back inspired because these other schools have taken money from the government or from the local community and reinvested it in their schools to create better infrastructure projects. And so community gardens and bicycle parking lots, because it's amazing like how committed Cambodians are to bicycling, and they're just everywhere when we first showed up, and like they decided they wanted to organize their bicycles good. Planting trees, like endemic species of rosewood, are because these other schools, like, they're also impoverished, they're also like struggling, but they're taking the money and they're reinvesting it for the children. And there's two schools in particular that have invested a remarkable amount of money back into their school system because they've seen other people doing it, and we've taken the folks from the school and the a few community members, and they come back and they decide we want to reinvest in our school, and it's really a beautiful thing. With teacher coaching, like, there are a few teachers that, like, are bizarrely engaged. Like, they don't have any reason to listen to me because I don't actually, like, have any, like, leg to stand on in that setting. But when we work together, they adapt their practices, and they change from a lecture style format to playing games with children. And it's really a beautiful thing to see that happen. I'm really shocked. Not shocked, but, like, am completely humbled by their willingness to listen to me. Because again, helping them support literacy as an illiterate person is, like, definitionally ridiculous. My coworker Molly is the most, like, beautiful rose that I've met in Cambodia, and she often bears the brunt of my ignorance. We go to schools, and it's a long drive, maybe an hour, on a dusty road, and she has a son with cerebral palsy that often wakes up in the middle of the night, and so she's often has to work the second shift. And so she shows up to work exhausted, but she's still phenomenally kind to everyone she meets, the teachers, the students, and she's the most patient person maybe the world's ever known. We were in a classroom, and the teacher was just, like, lecturing again and again, and just hitting, like, just like, not, the students, like, were just, like, running around the classroom like nothing was happening, which might remind you of, like, classrooms here in the States. And it was just, like, I was just so frustrated, and I was like, Molly, what are we gonna do? Like, I don't understand. And she's like, Martin, I don't know what we're going to do about this situation, and there's nothing, maybe nothing we can do, but you need to smile more. And she's right. And that's maybe the second most, like, galvanizing moment is, like, being present in the space, and you stare at the problems, you create more problems, you don't create solutions. And so, like, the attitude that I bring into any given situation is going to determine whether anything can come out of it. And when you smile at teachers and you're like, hey, what did you think? And, like, do you have any questions? They often are, like, not only willing to listen, but, like, willing to engage. And those are different things. And so I need to smile more. I went back to church because she told me that the people at the church were scared of me because I wasn't smiling. And so I went back to church, and today I'm going to smile at church, which is just, like, such a strange thing to have to convince yourself to do. But part of it is because it's in Khmer language and there's no interpretation, and I don't understand what's going on. Just, like trying to understand, my, like, trying to understand face is not friendly. The key there is to stop trying to understand and just focus on the smile. And I was sitting there, and I've been playing soccer on a local Cambodian soccer team for a while, and one of my teammates was sitting next to me, and he started talking to me in perfect English. And I'd played with him in soccer for like a couple of months, but because I was not smiling, he didn't find it, like, he didn't have the confidence to talk to me. Which was just like, holy smokes, Martin. Like, you need to smile more. And so we started having dinner together, and he's becoming a good friend and helping me figure out like the context there. Yeah, this brings me to the final piece that is the reason that I know I needed to come and talk to y'all today. Before I left, I had many of you sign my hymnal. And thank you for your kind words. They've been really meaningful to me. Carolyn wrote on the hymn we're going to sing, God lift you up on eagle's wings, bear you on the breath of dawn, make you shine like the sun, and hold you in the palm of his hand. And she wrote, this hymn has gotten me through the last 5 to 7 years. I hope you find it meaningful for your time in Cambodia. And when I wake up and I see people and I pray that for them, like, things aren't nearly as tough. Things aren't nearly as bad. And the one that was, like, the most bizarre or miraculous, Mali's son, again, has cerebral palsy, and he still has cerebral palsy. But we were at church, and I picked him up, and he was really struggling. He was, it goes through phases, and there's not access to a lot of healthy medication, so his body was, like, pretty locked up. He hadn't been moving his arms and legs for, like, a while, and he'd been running, like, a pretty high fever consistently, and the fever was now under control, but he was, like, clearly unhealthy. And they were playing that song, Lord, the camp song. So if you've been in evangelical things, you know, Lord, I lift your name on high. Lord, I love to sing your praise. Yeah, they're singing that song. And I was thinking that and thinking about how, like, Jesus is, like, the God of Vasut. And, like, Vasut is the fullest manifestation of Jesus that I know. And you start praying for that. God, lift you up, hold you in the palm of your hand, make you shine like the sun, bury on the breath of dawn. I started moving his hand to the music, right? And at first his arm was really stiff and he didn't want to move. But by the end of the song, he had started moving his hands and his feet, like, independently to the rhythm of the music. And that the idea that hymn, that prayer, increasing his, like, mobility, when it was given to me to pray for people by Carolyn, was miraculous. I don't know how to describe, like, his physical health, like, he still has cerebral palsy and he'll always have cerebral palsy, but his physical health has improved so much. He is physically active in a way that he never was before. Sometimes I think he doesn't, like, he loves to, like, pull himself like a little distance or roll over, and he started vocalizing for the first time. Like, he's very young, and he started, like, vocalizing in a way that's just remarkable. And this is the prayer that I would like you to think about next time you're working with somebody that you like really want the best for. Think about those words from Carolyn. God lift you up on eagle's wings, bear you on the breath of dawn, make you shine like the sun, and hold you in the palm of his hand. It's a prayer for everyone, but especially for oppressed folks and folks that are struggling, because it changes how at least I am able to interact with them in a way that is more joyful and more hopeful. Thank you.